chat. Keep it alive through these lines I write. I keep it live cause I thrive. I might just blow your mind tonight. I'm so hyped, but it's no hype. From this height, it's direct hits on sight. I'm your type, lend me your ears to show you that there's something in me. I'm not giving up, I'm standing right here, holding these days hostage, and I'll make this my year. We turning fear into love, and the love's in the air. I love doing this cause nothing compares, nothing can share that same type of feeling. When you feeling them flares, they can't catch it, it's havoc. I rip to a tear, switch the scenario, my stereos, I leave them impaired. Variables start to change, and they're all in my range. I just gotta grab it, it's all mathematics. Every step is drastic, I make it fantastic. I'm trying to take your breath away, asthmatic.
This is live through the stereo. Go and let it blow, blow through the stereo. I'ma let them know, no through the stereo. Yo, here we go, go through the stereo, stereo. This is live through the stereo. Go and let it blow, blow through the stereo. I'ma let them know, no through the stereo. Yo, here we go, go through the stereo, stereo.
Yeah, just nod your head with it. So explicit and vivid. Every image is intricate, intimate. I put my all into it. No scrimmage and no rules. I'm a pro tool. Hear my heartbeat beating to the vocals. I'm so loco, lost my mind, oh no. It's ponderoso, dope so. No overdose, cause it's dope, yo. Man, this is house grown, mixed with some milestones. So I let the style flow, down like the Dow Jones. Bringing it with some foul tones, letting the crowd know. We getting loud, so it's eardrum rudiments. Yeah, we bring it rude again, move little hooligan. Music for tuning in, full time to the 10. I'm on my clock like I told you, I'm doing this for dreams we pursuing.
Hey everybody, welcome back to the Anti-Media Radio. Once again with your host Nick Burnaby here on UCY.TV. Thank you everyone for tuning in, and welcome back to the show. Last show was on Wednesday. We are probably going to be doing our show this Wednesday. I am getting ready to go to Philadelphia to go to the Free Your Mind Conference. If anybody is in that area, please come join us at the Free Your Mind Conference. It's going to be a bunch of ideas being talked about, and workshops, and all kinds of good stuff, networking, which is, to me, normally the best thing about going to these conferences is getting to meet a lot of people, a lot of cool people, and people that you may only have read their books, or heard them on the radio, or read their articles, or just heard about, saw their videos on YouTube, whatever. These conferences are a good place to meet people, and the Free Your Mind Conference is a very open, it's not a, I wouldn't call it a political conference, it's more of an idea conference. A lot of philosophies and agorism, spirituality, that kind of stuff, you know, positive stuff, I guess you could say. We're going to be talking about media. I'm going to be speaking on Friday alongside Luke Rutkowski and a few other media people. We're going to be talking about new media and the future of media and what we're working on and the projects that we're doing and how other people can kind of, you know, take the torch as well. If for whatever reason, you know, and just simply because we need more and more of it. You know, we need more and more journalists out there. We need more decentralized journalism. We need more media outlets and stuff and innovative media, because we got to keep challenging this status quo, you know, keep hammering away at the corporate media. We can't do it just by writing, you know, these articles on the anti-media. As much as I have huge hopes for the organization, I mean, there's no way in hell that we're going to do it alone, right? I mean, we're the anti-media, but there's no way we can take these guys down. So we need more and more people to step up and join in this media movement in one way or another, whether it's just live streaming every now and then, or social media, tweeting, starting your own radio show. I mean, there's all kinds of ways of doing it. Here, you know, on UCY here, when I first started out, I didn't really know what I was doing. I guess a lot of people probably still think I don't. but, you know, it's just a matter of understanding that it's something that needs to be done. And if you like doing it, then, you know, why not? Give it a try. Give it a spin. Don't be scared. No one's judging, really. Of course, there's always haters out there, but whatever. I'm joined in studio tonight by Jake Anderson, one of our newer team members. How you doing, man?
I'm good, Nick. Good to be here.
You may have seen his article called Eight Things That Are Spying on You That You Wouldn't Think Are Spying on You. And it basically went into some of these contraptions, some of these, you know, some of these everyday items that are now being turned into surveillance tools for corporate America and for the government. I mean, it's kind of like very, I guess you can call it Orwellian, you know, where it's like everything is starting to watch you. The article talked about how they were putting surveillance equipment inside of mannequins, inside of stores.
Mannequins, vending machines, blocks of television now watch you. The Big Bang Theory did an experiment, or they did an experiment during the Big Bang Theory. The television sets were watching reactions on people's faces. Kinect, they claim they're not, but who really believes?
There was a big story that we covered on the Anti-Media recently about Samsung and how their TVs, through via third-party apps and stuff, were able to look, you know, look through the TV, or, you know, the camera on the TV, look back at the people. And the thing that set people off, it's like, well, it even said right there in the fine print that it may, you know, sense motions and stuff even when it's not turned on. You know, so it's like this stuff's spying on you when you think it's turned off.
Right.
And
that's how it is with Kinect.
Yeah. And then, you know, there was another recent story that just came out a couple weeks ago. I don't know if you saw this one, but there were these little, they look like those little electrical boxes, kind of. It looked like a little R2-D2 looking thing. And they found them in front of some post offices. And they were using surveillance technology in front of the post office, too. And so people were trying to figure out, you know, why are they doing that? And I'm guessing that it's probably drug war, you know, related, because they're trying to see who's going in and they're seeing who the packages are going to, and they're using facial recognition and all that stuff. But yeah, it's surveillance is a problem that's really creeping into our lives. And there is, of course, a big movement of people trying to, you know, fight back for privacy and stuff. But it's a big fight. It's not a small issue. Privacy is huge. And Snowden has been all over the news in this past day or two. And we got an article up there about Snowden as well. It was with his interview with the comedian guy.
John Oliver.
Yeah, with Oliver.
Oliver's blowing up, man. That guy, he's gonna end up being the next John Stewart.
Yeah, definitely. I kind of tell that that's coming on. But Snowden did an interview with him, and what I liked about that interview, so I haven't watched the whole thing, but Oliver's starting to, I mean, his tactic, I think, is pretty effective, and it's by personalizing you know, the issue of surveillance, you know, and he's literally talking about it as dick pics. You know, it's like the government has your dick pics,
right?
You know, and that really kind of personalizes it for people, as crude as that sounds. It really makes you think, like, damn, you know, they're really invading your privacy,
right?
And so I think that by him doing that, I think he's kind of doing us all a favor in a way of, you know, trying to get this threat of this overarching surveillance state, you know, back into the forefront of our minds. Because after the Snowden stuff died down a little bit, everybody basically just decided that, you know, it wasn't that huge of an issue, or I don't know why, but one thing is for sure, there hasn't been any reforms really. There hasn't really been any meaningful reforms that have reeled in the NSA since the Snowden leaks, you know, because the government has been so good with their propaganda to try to subvert the conversation.
Yeah, you're right.
I don't know if you remember, but they had this huge debate. Who is that? Who is the first big news company, the first big American news company to interview him? ABC or something? NBC? One of them. They framed this whole debate, is Snowden a traitor or is he not a traitor? You know what I mean? And instead of saying, should the government be spying on everybody or should they not be, they didn't. That's not the conversation they had. They said, is Snowden a traitor or is Snowden not a traitor? You know what I'm saying? So it's kind of like, I don't know, man. It's how they're able to subvert us by controlling the conversation, you know, and what this guy's interview did, John Oliver, is that it kind of brings it back up, you know, and it really brings it home to a lot of people, because a lot of people do send compromising photos nowadays on the internet, and you know, the dating scene online is pretty huge, you know, marketplace, and a lot of people send, you know, some not safe for work photos. And the prospect of the government having all of those is something that can really chill our free speech. And that's one of the things that Snowden has been so adamant about talking about, is the chill factor. When we know that we're being surveilled, when we know that we're being spied on, well, then that leads us to self-censorship, right? You know, and that's one of the biggest problems, is that, like, it's not even them. When the surveillance state gets so big, they don't even have to be spying on you. It's like that panopticon effect, right, where it's like you think everybody thinks they're spying on them, so nobody does anything that steps outside of the bounds. You know what I mean? So that to me is what can be something that we need to keep in mind when talking about the surveillance state, is that it can give us, it can undermine like our freedom of speech without even physically having to do it. We have a caller on the line now from 917. We're talking about Snowden and the John Oliver surveillance state. Did you have anything that you wanted to chime in on this? Hello, 917, can you hear me? All right.
It must have been Bill O'Reilly trolling us.
We had some trolls in our last show.
Yeah, I remember that.
So anybody, just for future reference, anybody calling in, when you do call, please keep your phone on mute or your computer on mute, and then we'll announce you by your area code, because that's how we see you on our screen, and that's pretty much how we're going to bring you into the show. If you want to announce yourself and introduce yourself and use your name, feel free. If you want to remain anonymous, that's fine too. If you're trying to troll us like those people were on Wednesday, then we're going to hang up on you. But we're not afraid to have a debate on some real topics. But if people are just trying to troll, then they're just trying to troll.
Yeah. Yeah. John Oliver, he stated that one of the reasons he went over there is because he saw a statistic that how few Americans still don't know who Edward Snowden is. And it just shocked him. So he wanted to go over there, and you're right. But he's popularizing it in a really, really brilliant way. I don't think we yet understand how effective this is going to be in the long run. But I have a theory that this could be a really, you know, pretty ingenious way to start reframing the debate here.
Exactly. And that's what we've been talking about too. You know, and that's one of the things that we want to do here on the anti-media, because we're not just going to be doing strictly news stuff. I mean, we're also interested in doing entertainment, and I'm sure the listeners have seen a few of our more entertaining articles, like the one that was called 10 Reasons Why the DHS Shutdown is the Best Thing That Will Never Happen. I mean, some of these are pretty entertaining articles and stuff. Sorry about my coughing. I got somewhat of a cold over the weekend. I stayed up to watch the blood moon until 5 in the morning. And I mean, it was nice, but, you know.
Wasn't that supposed to cause like a shift in the global paradigm overnight?
I mean, there was a bunch of different theories. I mean, there was the apocalypse people and, you know, and the all kinds of different theories on that. I mean, I know that they're pretty significant.
I guess it's supposed to happen subtly.
A lot of cultures, a lot of ancient cultures celebrated the blood moons, and then it kind of coincided there with Easter, which is also the spring equinox, right? And I always confuse the solstice and the equinox. I'm pretty sure it's the equinox. It all kind of coincided there together, but I stayed up too long, and I must have caught a cold by doing it or whatever, so forgive me if I'm coughing a little bit during the show, but you know, at least I'm not calling in sick.
I think
well, then again, I kind of am calling in sick, because I'm calling in here and I'm kind of sick, but
I think your listeners will forgive you, Nick.
So then you got this other thing on Snowden where these people put a I guess you call it a bust. No, it wasn't really a bust. Yeah, they put a sculpture up there in New York, in Brooklyn, of Snowden. Did you see that?
Mm-hmm.
And it caused quite the stir.
They wanted Chris Kyle. They wanted a bust of Chris Kyle instead.
Yeah, if it was Chris Kyle, they would have left it up there. But it's pretty brilliant. I mean, it's just one little piece of art, and it went viral, right? You know, so this, again, it helps uplift, you know, this idea that we're being massively surveilled, and you know, that's the main thing. Whether we do it through art, whether it's through comedy, whether it's through hard-hitting news articles, whether it's through video, one way or another, we have to accomplish this goal. And it was just like I was saying earlier, we need all the help we can get, you know. So I'm gonna try to get a videotaped copy of the talk that I'm gonna give at the Free Your Mind conference, and I'll share it with everyone that listens to us here and reads our website. I'll post it up on the website once I get the video of it, so that everyone can join in on this media movement, because it's the transformation is coming. I mean, I don't think the blood moon ushered it in, but it had been coming anyway, you know. So I think we're joined now by DB Schwartz. How's it going, man? All right, I don't know. Seems like nobody can hear us tonight.
Yo. Pretty good. Just getting everything set.
Cool, man. Yeah, we've had a few callers, but no one's said anything so far. Anyway, if anybody else wants to call in and join us, before we're going to start getting into some other news stories here. And first, we're going to lead off with what the meme was about that we posted for the show, because I know that's a hot subject. If anybody wants to join the conversation, feel free to call us 718-717-8296, or you can call us on Skype, the anti-media, and you'll be able to get a hold of us there. So what's going on with the elections in 2016? We went over this briefly in the last show about, you know, potential Bernie Sanders candidacies and you know, other supposed, you know, people that are supposedly going to run for president that are actually have an innocent agenda or a less evil agenda or whatever. Elizabeth Warren kind of falls into that category. For some people, Rand Paul kind of falls into that category. But, you know, the thing is that it almost seems like the corporate media is already trying to set up this Bush-Clinton showdown once again. And I know we've joked about this before. You know, we one of our really viral memes that we posted up one time was, if it's Hillary and Clinton running in 2016, which country are you going to move to? You know, it's kind of a running joke, but it's kind of sad because it really is coming in, you know, it really is turning into somewhat of a monarchy in a way. Even though, yeah, it may be shifting families a little bit. All of these presidential candidates, all of these former presidents, except for like one, have been related in one way or another to a king that dates back to like 12th century England. So in the end, we haven't really had much of a choice when it comes down to, you know, voting for people outside of this one big family. You know, and a lot of people will also say, well, it doesn't really even matter, you know, who you vote for. But for me, I kind of look at this Bush-Clinton thing. I think it can be, there's two sides of this coin that you can look at, you know. You can look at it like, oh my God, I can't believe it's Bush-Clinton again. And this is completely stupid, or you can look at it and use it as like to reaffirm the fact that you've been knowing, you know, that you know something is not right. It's like, oh, Bush and Clinton, yeah, I could have predicted that. to me, I think if it is Bush Clinton, because we've talked about this before, I think that this timeline for change, and everybody wants to change everything overnight, but nothing's going to change overnight. It's a timeline. You know, we need a long time to get out of this situation that took us a long time to get into. But what I think is that if we do see a Bush-Clinton showdown. It will lead more and more people over towards the anti-establishment spectrum of the political spectrum, I guess you could say, because I think more and more people are going to start realizing, oh wow, this is just a huge sham, you know. And it's, you know, before Obama became president, you remember all the people that were upset with Bush, you know, all the people that were on the left that were really upset with Bush and all of his wars. And then they all voted for Obama, and everyone was kind of upset about Obama not really doing what he was said he was going to do, and closing Guantanamo, ending the wars, bringing the troops home and all that stuff, fixing the economy. So a lot of people are already like leaning, a lot of the people that are the quote unquote progressives are leaning much further over towards the Elizabeth Warren, Bernie Sanders spectrum of things. And like, I have a bunch of friends here in San Diego that are progressives, and I can't name a single one of them that actually supports Hillary Clinton. Because Hillary Clinton is pretty well known as being more or less not so much a progressive, but more like a neocon. You know, she's a very much a warmongering neoliberal, or whatever you want to call them. I mean, it's
a corporate shill also.
Yeah, a corporate shill. You can call her that too. and it wouldn't be very far off at all. She's so deep in the pocket. She's part of the CFR. I mean, she's part of all the wrong groups. And so I think that if we did see this Bush-Clinton thing, it would actually turn into a positive thing. And I don't expect to fix the electoral system by 2016. I mean, if we're actually going to try to fix the electoral system, it's going to take a long, you know, it's going to take a while to get it fixed.
I don't think that either. But you don't think having a more progressive third party candidate pushing her from the left would push her further to the left? Or I guess you don't really care about left and right, but
well,
push,
are you talking about Hillary?
Yeah, you don't think like Sanders or Warren?
I mean, it would, but that would only be like, and that's the thing, is that like it would be like lip service.
Right. Well, I know that, but it would still force her to take positions that, while she would be able to warm her way out of most of them, she would still have to take certain positions that later might be hard to get out of. The same way Obama, you know.
Obama made a lot of positions.
A lot of positions, and he squirmed out of a lot of them, but some of them he was like, all right, you know. And I think we're still seeing a lot of the executive order. And I still think we're going to see a lot of stuff come out within executive orders here in his last, you know, bit of time in office. But anyway, to your point, that's just a counterpoint of thinking.
I
maybe
think that, I think that I don't think Elizabeth Warren's going to run, but I think Bernie Sanders is, and he could have that effect.
Yeah.
But again, if there is a voice that is speaking too much truth in the debates, they get ignored.
You know? Right.
That's unfortunate. But that's what happens to a lot of these guys that try to run. Whether we're talking about Ron Paul, Dennis Kucinich,
right,
Ralph Nader, you know. They get silenced.
Yeah.
Unless they have billions of dollars to run with, like that one guy, was it Ross Perot? I think it was.
Yeah.
You know, they have no chance.
Ross Perot. He could have won, man. Remember, Clinton dropped out of that race. or Perot dropped out of that race. And once he did that, that's when Clinton took over. Ross Perot could have been president. That would have been what a bizarro universe that would have been.
Yeah, that would have been some crazy stuff, I guess you could say. And then that brings us up to what I think is what's going to be really big in the 2016 election, is going to be war, you know, because obviously we're in a war precipitation period where it seems like we're marching towards, at the very least, a new Cold War scenario. At the very worst, you know, World War III scenario. So that's, to me, is what's going to be decided in 2016. You know, is are we going to have a group of politicians that are going to start up the war that ends all wars? Or are we going to have a group of politicians that are going to actually, you know, not do that, and if the Iran, you know, the Iran peace talks, the Iran nuke talks, if they give us any, you know, foresight into what to expect, the outlook doesn't look very bright, you know, because what we see right now, and I'm sure everyone knows, the Republicans have more or less taken over the Congress, the House, they've had the House for the last 4 years. They just recently got the Senate in the last election. And we saw what those senators did, the 47 senators, that when they violated the Logan Act, they sent that letter to Iran.
The war criminals.
All these war hawk guys, after it was announced over the weekend that they had made some major headway in the Iran in the peace talks, and that they were basically had a deal. A lot of these guys, and believe me, it crosses the aisle, whether we're talking about Bob Menendez, which is that guy that's being indicted for corruption, to John McCain, you know, in the Republican Party. They are all coming out and saying, "Oh, we can't do this. We can't allow for Iran to, you know, get everything that they wanted, and we can't allow for this peace to take place." You know, and
even though Halliburton, which is a GOP company, sold nuclear weapons to Iran a few years back, that was a move. That's the kind of diplomacy the GOP likes. Let's sell nuclear weapons to DB. Can back me up on this. A few years ago, I'm sure you guys posted on it, Halliburton sold nuclear weapons to Iran.
Oh, I never heard about that.
Yeah, they did it. It's documented. Anyway.
Hello.
Hey, I think we have a caller on the line from 917. How's it going? You're on the anti-media. What do you want to talk about?
Good. How are you? Hello.
We're talking about the Iran peace deal right now, and how a lot of these, you know, how they were trying to sabotage this deal and just trying to make sense of it. What do you think about that deal?
I think it's ridiculous, and I think that what's going on in the current situation is something that really not enough Americans that really are out there for, you know, our freedoms are being involved in things that are going on right now, especially with this Iran deal. And I feel like that we really have to put more effort into what we want to see as an outcome for the people of the country. Because if we don't, the way things are going, we're only going to end up, you know, astray from not only the world, but ourselves. And I think the path that we're going down because of this deal, it's setting up everybody for disaster, including us, especially us as people.
So what do you think is wrong with this peace deal with Iran?
Hey.
Yeah, what do you think?
Hello.
Yeah, what do you think is wrong with this peace deal?
I just think that the peace deal with Iran is really going to end up, you know, screwing so many people over, including us as a whole. And I think it's just wrong. I think it's completely wrong. And I think that if we don't do something about it, then that's it. We're doomed.
Him to do? Do you want him to go to war with Iran instead of go through diplomacy? I'm not sure what your position is.
No, I don't think we should be going to war with Iran. I don't think Iran has any tolerance against us. I think Iran's a great country, and I think that their only goal is for peace. And I think that, you know, we should leave them alone because they've done nothing wrong, absolutely wrong to us. And all the facts that were presented through the media and that are currently being presented are only established from people that are, you know, reporters and people who think that they believe there's something going on. But we don't have any solid evidence that, you know, they're out there to get us.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, that's why I'm kind of optimistic because, you know, the deal going through, you know, the people of Iran were very happy about it. Of course, it's not a done deal yet, but they've got the framework for this deal, and really what it's going to do is it's going to allow Iran to pursue a peaceful nuclear, you know, power program, and it's going to be overseen by the international community and all that good stuff. But in the end, what it's hopefully going to do is ensure that we don't end up in another land war in the Middle East with a country that, I'll come out and say it, it's a lot more powerful than what Iraq was when last time we went in there. For us to go into a war with Iran would not be a small undertaking. It would be very, to compare it to Vietnam, the Vietnam War would probably be something that you can probably compare it to as far as
it would take. It would take a declaration of war to defeat them, and that would take everybody in the U.S. having the willpower to do it, and nobody's going to have it. So, everything they're doing right now is just proxy war, until whatever the end game, I guess.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm kind of, optimistic about the peace deal. But, we got this other situation going on that we can't overlook, and it's not – no one's really talking about it very much, and the mainstream is not going into it. But what I want to get into next is what's going on in Yemen, because right now in Yemen you got these what they call Houthi rebels that have basically pushed the government out of most of the country. They have one city left, which is their stronghold, and that's about it. But you got Saudi Arabia and a bunch of other Sunni countries that are going in and bombing them, and the U.S. has already said that they are offering, the same old type of advice and support. They're not bombing directly, but they're offering support and stuff. And we're talking about dozens of warplanes and ships and all kinds of stuff out there in Yemen.
I mean, the United States. We have coordinated so many airstrikes on Al-Qaeda in Yemen for so many years, but I still feel like the Saudis, they have organized a military operation against them with other, Sunni Arab nations. And I feel like we have only just backed out of the Saudi allies with, lack of intelligence support. And I feel like if we were to get involved, that would only make the region super unstable.
Yeah, there was a lot of these rebels that were fighting in Iraq, not the rebels, but the militiamen that are trying to protect Iraq from ISIS. When we joined in the bombing of Tikrit, there was a big operation to retake the city of Tikrit. A lot of these guys were like, I'm not going to fight if we're fighting alongside the Americans, and in a way it sabotaged their operation. And you're right, I think anytime we involve ourselves out there in the Middle East, the people out there just don't like us. And anytime anybody backs anytime the U.S. backs some kind of movement in the Middle East, it's automatically going to be distrusted, and it's going to be extremely hard to maintain. It's like, have these guys never read Machiavelli and they don't know how all this stuff works? It's almost, and we've said this before, it's like they want it to be unstable. That's what they're seeking, they're not trying to stabilize it. Doing all this intervention, they're trying to make things worse.
If you look at the evidence and if you look at what has occurred, and I totally agree with what you're saying, it's only caused almost in every involvement that we as a whole, as a country, have been involved in, it's only ended up in disaster. Always, almost. You know what I mean? And the mass murder of so many people resulting in so many deaths, not directly because of us, but because of the involvement of different forces and different allies within those regions of countries.
Yeah. It's been going on for so long. And it's just a matter of, is it ever going to end, And so we're seeing a continuation of this. So at the same time as we're getting this good news with Iran, and it's like, okay, we may see peace with Iran. It's like at the same exact time, we're like going, not directly, but, supporting this in intervention into Yemen. And we're trying to uphold a president that's not a popular president. And And so we're fighting against the natural cycle of civilization by trying to prop up these dictator type of people and these unpopular presidents and unpopular governments. When rebels are able to overthrow your government with 100,000 guys, you're probably not that popular of a government, you know? And so what in the hell are we doing supporting that government when their own people have overthrown them? In different situation, if this were Ukraine, for instance, then we'd be calling those guys freedom fighters. We'd be calling the Houthis freedom fighters. You know what I'm saying? If this was Syria, we'd be calling them freedom fighters. But, since it's in Yemen, where we had our own government installed in there, a U.S.-backed government, now all of a sudden, oh, these guys are terrorists. We got to help them bomb these people. You know, and it's just a total lack of moral consistency that allows these guys to run roughshod over all forms of logic, and they basically get to choose. They get to pick and choose which revolutionaries are the good guys or the bad guys, and they get to pick and choose which dictators are the good guys and the bad guys. I thought all dictators were bad guys. You know what I mean? Why are we upholding a dictatorship in Saudi Arabia while at the same time saying, Gaddafi has an evil dictatorship in Libya? You know, it's like, where in the hell is the consistency?
It's like real-time historical revisionism.
Yeah, once again, back to Orwell. That's what the guy's job was. That's what George's job was.
That's Winston in the main character. Yeah, that's right. His job was
to edit
the
history in real time.
I forgot about that.
Yeah, it's horrible, man. And they're doing it right here. And the media is so complicit. I mean, when's the last time you heard the media talk about Libya? I can't remember the last time I heard the corporate media talk about Libya. So people like to say, the AP's not biased. Well, the AP's biased by the shit they choose to cover.
Right.
They may not have to put out really opinionated stories. All they have to do is shine light on some things and shine darkness on others.
Crimes by omission.
So they want to talk they love talking about Libya when Gaddafi was in power. Now that Gaddafi's gone and the country's completely fallen into chaos because of us, now we don't talk about Libya no more. We don't do that no more. So these guys are biased simply by the stories that they choose to cover. And it seems like they are always working just hand in glove with the government, man.
They're so right.
And they're just covering it. The media covers up for the damn foreign policy. The corporation, the military-industrial complex lobbies the government to go blow stuff up. It would hamper their profits if there was stability and peace. You know, you're not making bombs and stuff. Well, you're not making money. So these huge corporations, it's in their interest to keep these countries destabilized so they could fund both sides of the war. I mean, it's the oldest trick in the book.
We see it. Why don't others see it? It's so obvious.
I mean, if you really look into it, I feel like when you evaluate the two options in the entire perspective of a diplomatic collapse, I feel like military action on one hand and acceptance, reveals that they, of course, you know, it's appetizing for them. But however, I feel like a lot of the evidence strongly suggests that the difficulties with military action would really just outweigh the downsides of, you know, deterrence.
Absolutely.
Yeah, man.
Not even to mention the, you know, hundreds of thousands of people, innocent civilians who would be killed to uproot a regime. I mean, like Nick was saying, I mean, Iraq was a veritable cakewalk in terms of military protocol, and literally millions of civilians were killed. Imagine what the toll is going to be for a country that has a significantly more robust military.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, it seems like countries are just getting tired of it, you know. And if you look around the world, we just put an article out today on the anti-media about these countries in Latin America that are getting ready to say, hey, we want to kick you guys out of here. Because, you know, the U.S. has hundreds of military bases all spread out through South America, Central America. And they, you know, they use it to intimidate and to do, you know, who knows what, you know. They got military bases. I don't know what they do down there. They do something. But what we do know is that these countries down south are starting to get tired of it. And former Colombian President Ernesto Samper recently suggested that Latin American countries should begin to renegotiate the terms of their relationship with the U.S. government and request that they close their military bases within these countries. Now, this guy is also the Secretary General of a, it's basically like a union of the Latin American countries and stuff. So he's actually pretty, you know, a pretty influential guy down there. And I think these countries are just so tired of this imperialism, you know, and they know that it's no good. They know the history. I mean, we haven't been taught the history. Like, most Americans haven't been taught the real history of all these coups that we've done down in Guatemala, Honduras, Colombia, Argentina, Chile. I mean, all these countries, Brazil. We weren't taught all that stuff in school, man. We weren't taught about the American eugenics and all the horrible stuff that we've done. But these people down there know. They know the crimes that we've done. They don't forget. You think that they forgot 50 years ago that we pulled some genocide on them over there? No, they didn't forget. So they don't want us having our bases over there anymore, man. And those bases are a sticking point. Look at Japan. Japan's another example. A lot of people in Japan are trying to kick the U.S. bases off because in Japan, they got a huge military presence. Huge military presence in Japan. So people are trying to kick the U.S. out of Japan. I mean, we're starting to get blowback in every corner of the earth. Now, keep in mind that unofficially we have like over 1,000 bases. I was doing some research a couple days ago on it. You know how many bases we have in Germany alone? 227 military bases in Germany alone.
What?
Yes. So all these countries are getting tired of us, man.
I mean, I totally agree. I feel like a lot of people, I mean, even the small group militants in these countries hate the USA. And really, if you look at it, so much of the time and in the years they spent planning, you know, I mean, all of this stuff. I mean, around the world, there's many great people where they're pleased by assault to the point of celebrating, and that's a fact. But many more don't support the expulsion, for example, of the Twin Towers, you know, and even condemned it. But still, they expressed understanding for the motives of, you know, the terrorists. But again, why do they hate us? And that's a question, you know, many ask. The U.S. population is really generally ignorant and miseducated and deliberately lied to about international affairs, even more than domestic politics. I mean, they see the U.S. as a peaceful and friendly country, which really helps other nations out of goodwill and otherwise wants to be left, you know, alone. But suddenly, as they see it out of the blue, the U.S. was attacked. And, you know, U.S. working people identify with the national state since they're kind and decent people. You know, they obviously assume that their national government is also kind and decent. But like terrorist attackers, you know, people here in this country mentally make a nationalist bloc between the U.S. state and the ruling class and also the working population here in the U.S. And, you know, they think of themselves as quote-unquote America, and they say we and us, and they're always speaking about the national state of which they really know little about and have such less control, you know, and I feel like the explanation that's offered by the U.S. government and the media is that they hate our freedom and our democracy, and they hate our way of life. I mean, this supposed explanation is given mostly strongly by U.S. figures on the right, and who agree with the worst Islamists in opposing separation of church and state, you know, equality for women, let's say, rights for gays and lesbians. However, I mean, they charge that they, in their poverty, resent U.S. wealth. And that might be closer to the truth. You know, of course, to understand why so many hate the U.S. is not to justify the few who committed mass murder at the World Trade Center and the Pentagon.
Yeah, man, and you know, it's funny, the argument that people make is that they hate us for our freedom, and it's kind of funny, you know, considering post 9/11 policies and stuff. Now we got the Patriot Act, the NSA, militarized police. I mean, if they hated us for our freedom, they really don't have much of a reason to hate us anymore.
No, they love us now.
You know, because we've devolved into a police state, a surveillance state. We touched on that a little earlier in the show. I mean, if that were the case, they wouldn't really have much to hate anymore. But yeah, like I was saying, I mean, we're not even educated about what's going on in our own backyard. You know, we've overthrown dozens of countries in Latin America and installed dictatorships. We've backed genocide. We did an article at the end of last week that talked about how we were purposely infecting people with STDs, syphilis, and stuff like that. We've done that to our own people. We've done genocide on our own people. All of that stuff just isn't taught, you know. And as you were saying, the caller from 917 was saying, you know, we're projected this image of the country that we're this freedom fighting country that's protecting the world from bad people and all that stuff. When the truth of the matter could be no further from that, you know, it's like we're actually the largest terrorizing organization in the world that is probably oppressing more, helping to oppress more people than anywhere else. And
also the truth of the matter is that Nick is not saying that because he hates America. He's saying that because he wants to make America a better place.
Exactly. I mean, that's the whole thing. Like there's, you know, there's nothing healthier than criticizing the government. I mean,
that is
what we're supposed to have freedom of speech for. Now,
and the evolution's going to be come up with an alternative because we've been talking about how crappy it's been forever, but now we could do something about it, right?
Yeah, that's, you know, hopefully the goal. And you know, that kind of brings us into this freedom of speech thing because I don't know if any of you guys saw this, but Dianne Feinstein is basically now saying that we need they should ban the anarchist cookbook. And I don't know if anybody has ever seen this anarchist cookbook. I know when I was a young man, I had
Match Head Tennis Ball was the best one.
Let's just say I had the book when I was a young man, and you know. Anyway, Dianne Feinstein is saying that we need to ban this book. And this isn't the first time when she's done some egregious policy grab when it comes to freedom of speech. She's also the same one that was championing that so-called Journalism Protection Act or whatever, which is actually the opposite of what it claims it is. It actually excludes everyone from being a journalist that isn't on a corporate payroll. And basically doesn't afford them the freedom of speech protections that that everyone's supposed to universally receive under the First Amendment. But now she wants to ban these books, and they're blaming it on terrorism. You know, we're doing it to protect you, and it's for your own good and all that stuff. And once again, I mean, this is the same kind of talk that we heard before the Patriot Act, and it's the same kind of talk that we heard when they were selling us this NSA program. It's the same kind of stuff that we heard when they were selling us Iraq and stuff. And it's the same crap they're selling us now about ISIS, you know, it's not true. They don't hate us for our freedom, and the government is not doing stuff to protect us. I mean, the militarizing militarizing all these local cops, I'm sure that was to protect us, right?
Right.
Go ahead, DB. What were you saying?
I mean, it's just talking in circles because who is ISIS? Who funds them? The same people that cause everything around the world to happen, man, that governments don't want to happen. They're above governments. It's the same people. So until we shed their power source, which is the U.S. dollar, which is happening as we speak, until that actually happens, then it's going to be this world of endless war because it's a banker's world right now.
Yeah, wasn't there just a picture that surfaced of John McCain with the ISIS leaders when the group was created?
Yeah, yep. Yeah. He said, we're in constant contact with him. That was a direct quote. And that's why I said shows ago, the guy's the worst guy in the world. You can't find a bigger patsy than the guy, but he's one of thousands. And there's lots of these people that are turning on us because they don't believe in the American culture and the American country. And, you know, it's up to us to head them off, man, because look what they're doing. The gradual dissemination of a place that, you know, at least in the 50s for a significant amount of people, they got out of poverty and into industrialization and it led the way. And that's always been our place in history, at least recent history, was we were a beacon. And they're trying to shut that light off. And if our light goes off, all of humanity's light goes off.
I totally agree. I agree with your quote.
Yeah, man, and that's one of the reasons why we're in such a time-sensitive, you know, place, is that now we have the ability to, you know, we have the technology to destroy the whole world, you know, and we've talked about this before, the nuclear capabilities and all that stuff. I mean, this is really dangerous stuff that could be used to destroy everything.
Not just even nukes, but also magnetic pulses that could be used by some of these newer weapons that could just straight out take out an energy grid in one night. You know, it's beyond just nuclear at this point. There's nanotechnological weapons that are being developed. I mean,
DARPA.
I mean, the military industrial complex has to be dialed back. It's out of control.
Let me give you an example of the power and the scope of what they're at. And this is kind of an unsubstantiated report. You can dig it up, but in 2003, when we stormed Iraq and we tried to take over their airport and we couldn't because they had 20,000 Revolutionary Guards, in other words, their special forces guarding it, we dropped a neutron bomb on them, man. And it made a big bloody mess and a pile of bodies, and it left the infrastructure intact. And that's 12 years ago. So whatever the scope of what they have now, it's extreme to a level nobody could even understand. And it's probably prevented World War III. To a point. But man, there's so many insane people right now that are running things. It's only a matter of time if we don't stop them.
You know, me and Nick were playing a little mind jazz the other night. We were talking about like artificial intelligence and whatnot. And who knows, it may take a different, you know, synthetic form of intelligence to relieve us of our madness here at a certain point.
Then we're all the enemy, though. That's the Terminator proxy.
No, not necessarily. Not necessarily. It's not going to be Skynet.
It's already Skynet.
It could be simply, logistically speaking, we're going to take out, we're going to remove the people that are causing this and restructure things the way they need to be, like we all want it to be. We want to restructure it so that the people who are in there for greed and who are in there to make money, which is essentially what's happening, is the politicians who are screwing everything up, they want to make money. Get them out of there.
Yeah, you know, that's the thing, is that we have, like, this technology, whether we're talking about advanced weaponry or internet, satellites and all this stuff, drone technology, AI,
well,
like anything else, it can be used in the worst way, right? It can be used against us. It can be used to cause harm. It can be used to sway us. It can be used to enslave us. And all that stuff.
You're right, DB. They could.
It has to be, you know, we have to.
Well, it can free us, though. It can free us.
Exactly.
I mean, this is the thing that people always freak out about that I think is premature. Robots take us over. There's EMPs. They take out robots, right? And humans control those EMPs. I mean, we're in this loop right now. And then also AI, when it's given actual consciousness, because these things have been taking place, they turn on their creators because they see them as a bigger threat than the people they're sent out to kill. It's like the movie Stealth, where it turns on everyone eventually. So,
well, hopefully they would develop quickly enough to be able to start writing their own code and start, you know, kind of like a contracted evolution. They start to write their own code, and you know, we're a little off topic here, but
I mean, that's where it's going. I mean, it's all going to end.
No,
there.
But I mean, it's actually not off topic because
back to the technology, man. It's like we gotta keep in mind that we need to help develop these smart kids that are going to be able to help us get a grip on this technology, because I don't know a damn thing about robotics and drones and stuff, but I'm pretty sure my little brother does.
Well, they have to be grounded in social justice first, and that's why they need things like Howard Zinn's, you know, People's History of the United States. And that kind of stuff needs to be like required reading, you know?
Yeah, and the anti-media.
And the anti-media.org, absolutely.
So you can find out about the coups that we've been overthrowing these governments with all over the world. Iran, of course, is a victim of a U.S. coup. We can't forget about that. And that's one of the reasons why Iran has been so distrusting of us, is partially because of that. We overthrew their government, which was democratically elected. The guy that was elected was actually American educated. And then what happened was he nationalized the oil in Iran. And he was sharing, he basically took it over. It was being run by British and American oil companies. The
A resurgent Persian Empire would cut off the oil flow to the West, man. That's what it's all about. If they don't make a deal with Iran, and Iran overthrew or overran Saudi Arabia like they seem like they can, then that would really, really be negative for us. That's what this deal's about.
Interesting.
Yeah, I mean, Saudi Arabia is looking so weak lately, man. They can't even stop these little Houthi rebels that are going up there. They got like 30-something more planes and ships and all kinds of stuff, destroyers out there. And they can't stop these rebels that are going up there and taking out the Yemen government.
They're not a warrior class, Nick. They never have been, man. I mean, you have to look back at history and the former empires. The Persian Empire at one point gave the entire West a run for its money, and it's still completely capable of that, dude. It really is. So it's just the geopolitics, they've changed, but they're still there. The old families are still there.
Yeah, I don't... I mean, it's been going on for years, right? Thousands of years, in fact. We've been under these very similar conditions that we live, the way that civilization is organized. And unfortunately, the history books tell us that it's just oligarchy over and over again for the most part. You know, there's little bright spots here and there. There's really dark spots. But for the most part, it's remained the same since the days that we started domesticating food.
It's better on the surface, but debt still makes us all a slave.
Yep.
Right, but I mean, I'm sorry, my name's Emilio. In regards to what you said, I still feel like, as people, we need to fight. We need to take a stand. We need to take action. And there's just so many people that are misled every day, every hour, every second of their lives. And I think our main focus, starting from, within us, within ourselves, and here in our own homes, should be to really educate people on what's happening and direct them to really follow the truth. Because if we don't, then, everything's just going to, it's just going to smack us all right across the face. And before you know it, like you said, there'll be robots flying around and attacking, numerous people, and it'll be complete chaos. But it's sad, you know what I mean? And I feel like we've all heard it all before, but I feel like we need to learn from mistakes that, from the past, to leave, for example, Iran alone, back to what you were saying in Iran. I feel like the U.S. should seriously consider a non-military airstrike against anybody. And I feel like the truth is that a military airstrike intended to destroy Iran's program, if managed carefully, could spare the region and the world a very real threat. And that's what most people are saying. But I feel like you said, Iran really distrusts us, and they can't trust us anymore because we've proven that to them. And we really do need to leave them alone, especially. And I feel like it's their right to carry on with their programs, just as it is our right.
And yeah, man, it's I think our struggle here in the U.S., I don't know if you're in the U.S. as well, but our struggle here is internal, I think, and we got to get a grip on our own thing, our own program. We got to get our program straight, because right now it's unsustainable. It's causing a lot of, injustice around the world, and here at home too. I mean, we got the biggest prison population the world has ever seen. So it's a scary, prospect. And I think most of what needs to be done can be taken care of here. I don't think we need to be fiddling around in Iranian internal affairs. Pakistan, I don't think we need to be going and supporting another civil war in Yemen and all these places. We got enough work here, man. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in. Emilio, thanks for calling in. Feel free to call back on Wednesday. It's just 5 days a week, same time here on UCY. Peace, everybody. Let it blow through the stairs.
I'ma let them know, no, through the stereo. Yo, here we go, go through the stereo, stereo.